by Anat Cohen, a Japanese tale from her album Poetica. I like the music. I just played it because I find it peaceful and relaxing. Doesn't have a thing to do with the show tonight. You're listening to VBS Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for this hour of Sound Health. On this show, we attempt to bring you ideas and information that make your life a little more pleasant and you're living a little easier through education and sharing. Sound Health is brought to you by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. They're located in the heart of Southern Ohio. The Institute studies the effect of low-frequency sound on human emotions and physiology. If any of you are interested in participating in their latest study, sponsored by the Army, but it's on traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, or if you're interested in studying to become a provider or instructor dealing with voice spectral analysis as potential biomarkers for disease and stress, please write to us at soundhealth@soundhealth.org. Today on Sound Health, our guest is Dr. Michael Osner, MD. Guess that's redundant. He's a cardiologist devoted to the prevention of heart disease and the author of the Miami Mediterranean Diet and an upcoming book I just learned about called The Great American Heart Hoax. I want to learn about that. Dr. Osner, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is your book, The Miami Mediterranean Diet, a weight loss book or a heart prevention book or both?
Well, that's a very good question. I think most people think of nutritional books as simply dedicated to weight loss, and clearly you can certainly lose weight on the Miami Mediterranean diet, as we have shown over and over. But one of the major benefits is by following this diet and lifestyle, you can radically lower your risk of developing heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, and a whole host of degenerative diseases.
Dr. Osner, as you walk down the street or almost anywhere anymore, over half the people seem overweight, even little kids. What's going on?
Well, it's even worse than half. It's actually 2 out of 3 Americans today are either overweight or obese. And it's not only unfortunate, but clearly this obesity is more than just a cosmetic problem. It leads to diabetes, specifically what we call type 2 diabetes, and it leads to high blood pressure, and ultimately it leads to heart attacks and strokes. And I think that the number one cause of death in America is cardiovascular disease, meaning heart attack and stroke. And the what is really unfortunate is that we see a significant increase in this obesity epidemic in our young people, our children and our adolescents. And that's of concern to a lot of people, because we know that today's generation of children, if we don't change things, are the first generation ever that will not live as long as their parents. That's a statistic from the American Heart Association, or a prediction from the American Heart Association, and I agree with that. We have to turn things around.
Is it we're eating the wrong things, or we just have a bad food supply, or what's going on?
Well, I don't think it's very difficult to figure out what has happened. You know, I lump all of the a lot of the diseases that afflict modern man in industrialized countries as diseases of affluence, meaning that we certainly eat too much. We have caloric excess, and the caloric excess is not only with the fact we're eating more food, but we're eating more processed foods, foods that are that have high fructose corn syrup, foods that have trans fats, saturated fats, foods that are, certainly loaded with salt. And you combine this type of diet, along with the lack of exercise. You know, years ago, we used to, I know as a kid growing up in Miami, we used to run around in school and ride our bikes, and that's gone. Physical education has gone in the schools, and I think that we now see the computer age, where more and more people, children included, will sit in front of a computer or a television set, and it's unfortunate because there is a solution. And I think that if we consider the fact that the number one cause of death in both men and women, because women also, you know, the number one cause of death in women is heart disease, cardiovascular disease. Women are 10 times more likely to die from heart disease than from breast cancer. That's not to say breast cancer screening isn't important, but it certainly means that we need to focus our attention on prevention of heart attack, stroke, and vascular disease. And I think that the way to do that is to become very aggressive in our prevention strategies. Because what I told you is the bad news. Now I'm going to tell you the good news. Everybody likes good news. The good news is we now are able to halt the progression of this disease that we call atherosclerosis. That's a long, fancy term. That means a buildup of sludge, fatty deposits in our arteries that ultimately lead to rupture of these atherosclerotic plaques, and that's the cause of heart attacks. We can halt it in its tracks and even reverse it. And how do we do that? Clearly, with first and foremost, with lifestyle changes. We need to get people, and we could talk about this evening, we need to get people on a nutritional program that works. Not a dietary plan that's the latest fad diet of the week, but it should be a nutritional plan that has been shown over and over in numerous clinical trials involving literally hundreds of thousands of patients to prove that it significantly lowers the risk of heart attack and stroke and diabetes and hypertension and Alzheimer's disease and cancer. And that is the Mediterranean diet. And we also combine that with a sensible exercise. It doesn't mean that people need to, you know, become track stars and run in the Boston Marathon. What it does mean is that we should get the average American, who, by the way, is completely sedentary. The statistics there is also pretty frightening, that 90% of Americans are completely sedentary. They wake up in the morning, they drive to work after eating a big breakfast, they sit around all day in their jobs, they come home, they eat dinner, and they flop down in the easy chair and watch TV at night. We need to change that. And as simple as getting people to just walk 30 to 45 minutes a day, we have the data to show that significantly reduces cardiovascular disease. Now, I tell my patients that, listen, you don't need to go join a gym. You don't even need to go outside when it's cold, too cold or too hot. Yeah, watch television. Get your favorite show, if it's a 30-minute nightly news or a sitcom, but get off the couch and walk in place. Everybody could do that. I've got great-grandmothers that could do that. We have the data to show that you take the processing out of the food supply, eat a Mediterranean diet, which we'll talk about in just a minute, you know, start a sensible exercise, throw the cigarettes away if you're a cigarette smoker, and do some very simple and easy stress management techniques that take literally minutes a day, and that will translate into a significant reduction of not only heart attacks and strokes and diseases that I mentioned, but also the likelihood that you'll ever end up in a cath lab with doctors putting stents and catheters in you, or in the operating room with them with the typical heart surgical bypass procedure, which nobody wants to go through that. So this is a program that works. We've shown this over and over again. And the best part of the program is the food itself is absolutely delicious. So when I have a new patient, I tell the patient, I want you to start on the Miami Mediterranean diet, and I'm going to place a little $1 wager. And that is, you're going to try the diet for a month. And if you come back and you tell me that the food isn't more delicious than what you're presently eating and less expensive than what you're presently eating, then you win the dollar. And believe me, over 25 years, I haven't lost too many dollars. So we know that this nutritional plan works. It's been around for literally thousands of years in the Mediterranean regions of the world. And what does it consist of? It consists of fresh fruits and vegetables. It consists of whole grains instead of processed grains. That means when we're talking about whole grains, we're talking about whole grain bread, whole grain cereal, whole grain pasta and the like. We're talking about beans, a great source of soluble and insoluble fiber, and nuts, especially almonds and walnuts, which are especially healthy. We're talking about replacing butter and margarine with olive oil or canola oil. Or now we have these plant sterol and stanol spreads, these vegetable spreads that are free of trans fats. And on top of it, we certainly feel that having poultry in moderation and low-fat dairy products such as yogurt that's fat-free or low-fat milk in moderation is good, drinking lots of water. And what we don't do in a Mediterranean diet is what is commonly done in this country. And that is, people wake up in the morning, they have bacon or sausage for breakfast, they have hamburger or hot dog for lunch, they have steak for dinner, and they wake up the next morning and do it all over again. We consume too much red meat. Consumption of excessive amounts of red meat, we know, is bad for your health, leading it's too much saturated fat, and it also sends you down the inflammation pathway. And we could talk about inflammation tonight, because chronic low-grade inflammation is not good for the body. Contrast that with consumption of cold water fish, which we do recommend in the Mediterranean diet, such as salmon, sardines, mackerel, and the like. That fights inflammation. It reduces inflammation in our body. And a lot of people, myself included, feel that that's one of the reasons why the Mediterranean diet is so successful in decreasing all types of disease states. It's the fact that we quell inflammation. We decrease what we call oxidative stress and free radicals. We provide a host of very healthy antioxidants to the body. This is what we need to stay healthy. And I say that you combine this with a healthy lifestyle of the things we talked about, of sensible exercise, of smoking cessation, of stress management techniques, and we can go back to the way we used to be with having a very low likelihood of developing heart attacks and strokes, and especially at a young age. And it's not a day goes by that we don't hear of somebody who suddenly drops dead from a heart attack, such as Tim Russert, the noted reporter. And I think that's unfortunate, because often it snatches people in the prime of their life. I think it's reversible and it's preventable.
I want to get on a soapbox here for a minute, but then I want to ask you a question. I think we ought to start younger than adults, because the school diets here are Pepsi and hamburgers and spaghetti and fries and pudding and crappy food. It really doesn't have good stuff in it. It's very seldom they ever get a salad. So starting younger and teaching them good habits. And then you're a cardiologist devoted to preventing heart disease. Aren't you working yourself out of a job?
I hope I do. I think that we really, most of us went into medicine, to do the maximum amount of good. And honestly, I believe that it's not to say that surgery and stents aren't important for people in the throes of a heart attack, namely people that are unstable. But in my opinion, I think we do too much surgery, too much catheterization, and too much intervention in this country, and especially in stable individuals. I think we are much better served in embarking on a prevention approach like I discussed, and you're 100% correct. This should start, by the way, in childhood. We have ample evidence that heart disease, this atherosclerosis I was talking about, or the buildup of fatty sludge in the artery, in the wall of the artery, actually begins in childhood. We have the Bogalusa heart trial, where they actually looked at children who unfortunately were killed in accidents at a young age. And in this country, we found that even five-year-olds were developing the earliest signs of atherosclerosis that we call fatty streaks. And, of course, for those that are old enough to remember the Korean War, there was a study performed in the Korean War where they took 18- and 19-year-old troops that were killed in action, and they did autopsies and looked at their coronary arteries, and the majority of them actually had the atherosclerotic plaques that directly lead to heart attacks. So we know that we have to begin at an early age, and it's something that we should continue through life. And in my opinion, I think that we should start education to teach children and adolescents how to live healthy, how to eat healthy, the importance of exercise. That should be an essential part of our teaching. And, you know, I say over and over as I lecture around the country, and I ask doctors often, what does the word doctor mean? What does the word doctor mean? And most doctors, I find, don't even know the answer to that. They've been practicing years and years. It means teacher. It's the derivation of the word doctor means teacher, and we should teach people how to live healthy, not just be there to patch things up when they go awry, wait until people have their heart attack and stroke and then try to bail them out. You know, clearly we should teach. It's the old story, is it better to buy somebody a fish or teach them how to fish? And I clearly feel that a large part of what I do when I see a patient is teach the patient how to live healthy. And I find that patients are very receptive to this. They want to know what to do. They don't want to be taking 20 different pills. They don't want to be undergoing one invasive test after another, like a heart catheterization or an operation. These tests have risk. They're expensive. And clearly, they are not the initial approach in the majority of patients. It should be an aggressive prevention approach, and this can reverse a lot of the disease states that we see today. And I must say this. I mean, this is just an example of what I'm talking about. There was just completed a couple months ago a huge study in Spain with over 14,000 people. And what they did, they took healthy young Spaniards and they randomized them. They put them either in just eating your diet as usual, which is kind of a Western American-style diet, or follow a Mediterranean diet. And it was a long study, very well-conducted study, and they, at the end of the study, after years, they found that those following a Mediterranean diet had an 83% reduction in their risk of developing type 2 diabetes. 83% decrease. It's like slamming the door shut of developing diabetes. And we now know that diabetes, we have a major epidemic of that because of our obesity epidemic. So we know this works. The data out of the 7-country study by Dr. Ansel Keys, where he did the original studies, one of the conclusions was that a middle-aged man living in Greece and following a Mediterranean-style diet and lifestyle had a 90% less likelihood of dying from a heart attack than his middle-aged American counterpart.
Well, is heart disease on the rise around the world or only in America?
It's on the rise around the world. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is countries that previously did not have the high risk of heart disease, such as China and India, they now do. And why is that? If you go to China today, you see a lot of these fast food chains that we see all over America. And believe me, you go in and you start eating this type of food, the fast food, these chains are not interested in your health. The food is notoriously laced with preservatives, the most notorious of which are the trans fats, the high fructose corn syrup, the amount of saturated fat, the amount of sodium, and everything else that serves as a preservative for foods that is unhealthy. And again, this is something that can and should be reversed.
So what you're saying is lifestyle is more important than genetics?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Sherry. And the proof of that is really rather straightforward. And that is, and they've done these studies before. If you are living in Greece and you're following a Mediterranean diet, or you're living in southern Italy anywhere that borders the Mediterranean, you're following the Mediterranean diet and lifestyle, you have a very low likelihood of having a heart attack at a young or middle age, and the longevity, these people live longer than we do in this country. Yet, once you take these people that live in the Mediterranean region and they move to America, they lose this protection. And why is that? You think their genes change? No. It's they start following our lifestyle. They start eating our food. They stop exercising. You know, a lot of the areas around the world used to be that everybody had their garden, and everybody used to grow their own tomatoes and work in their garden and get the exercise and eat fresh food from the earth and from the sea. That's gone. This also, they did a study with Japanese, and because we know that the Okinawans eat a diet that's very similar to the Mediterranean diet, with fresh fruits and vegetables and cold water fish that brings the omega-3 fat to the table. And yet when the Japanese move to America, they lose their protection.
So race and nationality really doesn't have a lot to do with it. It's that lifestyle, and we can really do something about it.
There's no question. That's not to say there aren't genetic factors in individuals, but we know the most important thing, even if you have a family history of heart disease, is clearly leading that healthy lifestyle. Now, for those people that despite doing all of the things they should be doing and following the proper nutrition and following an exercise program of getting the walking, and they still have an elevated cholesterol, or they still have an elevated blood pressure, or they still have an elevated blood sugar, that's where we use medications. So medications should be used after the patient has been on lifestyle changes, or in addition to lifestyle. What I have found in a lot of individuals is that they think medications can be used as a substitute for a healthy lifestyle. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say that, gee, I'm going to take my cholesterol-lowering medicine, my statin, so I could go and have those French fries and hamburger at the fast food restaurant. And that's wrong. It is not a substitute. We know from the Harvard School of Public Health that the healthiest thing that you could do is what I've been talking about with lifestyle changes and leading a healthy diet which is non-processed and doesn't have a lot of saturated fat and the typical type of foods that we eat in this country. You know, clearly following that healthy diet and getting a modicum of exercise and everything I talked about, they concluded that you could lower the risk of heart attack by over 80%. And most cancers by about 70%. Whereas our most powerful medications, statins, that you hear being advertised on TV almost every night, they will lower the risk of a heart attack by 30%.
Dr. Osner, we're getting questions in from our regular audience, so I want to give the number out for maybe our new listeners. We have a toll-free number in Canada and U.S., 888-228-4494, and worldwide, toll-free number 877-489-6350. There are other numbers. You can go to bbsradio.com, and they're right on the front. And also, people can email us at radio@vocalprofiling.com, and we've got about 7 questions come in already. The first one, what is the difference, and how is heart disease and stroke related?
Well, they are related because they both involve blood vessels. You have to remember that every organ in our body needs to have blood supply to get its nutrients, whether it's the brain, whether it's the heart, whether it's kidneys. And I think that clearly as it relates to heart attack, we know that when you rupture one of these cholesterol-laden plaques that I talked about, and you then develop a clot in the artery, that's what leads to a sudden and sometimes catastrophic heart attack. Well, the same can occur in the brain, where you can actually rupture a plaque in an artery in the brain and have, you know, what is by some people call a brain attack, what we know as a stroke or a cerebrovascular accident, and it's the same mechanism. There are some differences in that sometimes in the brain there are little blood clots that can arise from the heart or from the aorta, which is the big blood vessel leaving the heart, and these clots can break off and travel to the brain and cause a stroke. Or sometimes patients, they actually have a rupture of an artery and have a bleed into the brain, and that's what we term a hemorrhagic stroke. So although there are some differences, the basic premise is pretty much the same, and that is a healthy lifestyle, which is to control cholesterol, which is to quell the fires of inflammation, which is to control diabetes and elevated blood sugar by, again, leading this healthy lifestyle, as well as to control blood pressure, because strokes especially can be caused by walking around with an elevated blood pressure, and especially in the elderly. As we know that as people get older, their blood pressure rises, and that often leads to strokes. And, you know, so I clearly feel that the approach is very similar to control both heart attack and stroke, and that is a healthy lifestyle, control of blood pressure, control of blood sugar, control of cholesterol. And I think the good news with all of this is that we can accomplish this today, and we can accomplish this in almost all individuals who come into our office, but only if we're aggressive with prevention modalities.
I'd like to ask a question about inflammation. You particularly talk in your book about C-reactive protein. Is that something you would use medication on, or is there a supplement or a food or a change in lifestyle that would help that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, clearly, the buzzword today is inflammation. What we have learned over the last 20 years, and especially over the last 10 years, and a lot of the research has come out of Harvard Medical School, is that it's chronic low-grade inflammation in our bodies actually promotes and leads to this progression of the fatty build up, and then to the rupture of the plaque that leads to heart attacks and strokes. And where does inflammation come from? Clearly, it's most importantly, it comes from an unhealthy lifestyle, because we know that eating the type of food that most Americans eat that have the things that I talked about, such as trans fat, such as high fructose corn syrup, and all the preservatives, actually increase inflammation in the body. And that could be measured. There is a test called the C-reactive protein, or CRP, and in particular, the high-sensitivity CRP is one of the tests that you can actually measure to see if somebody has too much inflammation. But diet is not the only cause, because I'll give you another frequent cause of chronic inflammation in the body, And, you know, I've always joked that my most important instrument in my office is not my fancy echo machine or stress test machine. It's a little 1 cent tongue depressor. When I look into the mouth and I see that people have periodontal disease and poor dental hygiene, that's a very frequent cause of inflammation, because a lot of the bacteria and a lot of the inflammation occurs in the gums. And it's amazing that you could take individuals who have not been to the dentist, and they don't floss, and they don't take care of their teeth, and that we know that the dentists have been telling us this for years, and they've been correct, that this leads to an increased risk of heart attack. So, first of all, every one of my patients is instructed to practice good dental hygiene and go in and see their dentist once or twice a year, a couple times a year for the cleaning and everything else. And I could go on and on. There are many other causes of inflammation, but I think that what we know is that there's one of the best ways of controlling inflammation and lowering CRP levels and lowering inflammation in the body is regular dental visits, a healthy diet that doesn't have these preservatives that increase inflammation, weight loss, because believe it or not, one of the sources of inflammation is abdominal fat stores. So you see people with these big bellies. Guess what these abdominal fat cells secrete? Inflammatory proteins that then lead to heart attacks. We now know the link between abdominal obesity and heart disease and cardiovascular disease. So now it's all starting to make sense as to why this obesity epidemic and what we term metabolic syndrome, people walking around with these big bellies, why they have high blood pressure, because part of the proteins that are secreted are actually elevate the blood pressure. We have other proteins that cause and feed this atherosclerosis process, leading to heart attacks and strokes. We know that these inflammatory proteins also exacerbate diabetes. They cause it by interfering with the normal function of insulin. So it really becomes critical that people have an ongoing relationship with their personal treating physician, discuss prevention strategies, and get the proper blood tests, you know, to see whether or not they are at risk. I always give the patients, you know, a copy of the Miami Mediterranean Diet. I wrote this book, The Miami Mediterranean Diet, because I needed to have something to give to my patients that was simple, easy to read, that literally had hundreds and hundreds of delicious recipes. And I have had an interest in this for over 25 years. And I know it works, and it should. I think the best thing that we could do is get a patient motivated and then have an ongoing relationship with their personal treating physician to discuss all these prevention strategies. Because in my opinion, that's the optimal approach in beating this disease, which is the number one killer in America.
We have another question from a regular listener. This is from Chris. Do you have a general guideline for supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids, since the standard American diet is so high in omega-6 fatty acids?
That's another very good question. And, you know, I would say that Chris is 100% correct, because we consume too much omega-6 fat and not enough omega-3 fat. In fact, I have said that omega-3 deficiency is the scurvy of our times. Years ago, when we didn't understand that you needed vitamin C and to eat oranges and grapefruits, scurvy was a disease. It's no longer present. But I think that omega-3 deficiency, it's felt that 9 out of 10 Americans are omega-3 deficient. Why is that? Because they eat too much red meat. They don't eat enough cold water fish like salmon and tuna and mackerel and trout and sardines. They don't eat enough plant sources of omega-3 like walnuts and flaxseed. And as a result, we have too much omega-6, which tends to send us down the inflammation pathway, and not enough omega-3, which fights inflammation. Now, for those that don't either like to eat fish or for whatever reason they don't eat enough, and by the way, you only really, for most Americans, only need 2 fish meals a week to maintain adequate omega-3 stores, But for some people, yes, fish oil supplementation, you know, and you can go over the counter in any of the conventional drugstores and get fish oil supplementation, and you could take a couple capsules a day. I would advise people if, you know, if they are going to be doing supplementation with fish oil capsules, that they put it in their refrigerator. It'll last longer, less likely to develop that fishy aftertaste, and certainly less likely to give them indigestion. Now, we do have data that people who have had heart attacks or people who actually have cardiovascular disease placed on fish oil actually have a decreased risk of not only recurrent heart attacks, but also sudden cardiac death. And there is one study looking at fish oil, large study out of Japan in healthy people who have not had heart attacks, where it actually was beneficial. So I tell my patients it's really simple and straightforward. It, you know, certainly if you like salmon, if you like trout, if you like sardines, you know, you should at least twice a week have 3 to 6 ounces of, you know, of fish, the cold water fish especially that brings omega-3 to the table, along with the plant sources, as I mentioned, like walnuts and, you know, canola oil has omega-3. And certainly for those that, you know, don't get adequate omega-3 in their diet, to discuss with their physician taking a couple fish oil capsules a day.
There are so many questions pouring in here. This is from Matt. My wife bought your book, and we've tried many of the wonderful recipes, but some of them caused my gout to flare up. Is there any relationship between gout and heart disease? I didn't see much about this in your book.
Well, actually, there is. We know that it's interesting because often people that eat, you know, there's certain foods such as red meat that can increase uric acid levels. And, you know, so that there's always been that relationship between high uric acid levels and an increased risk of heart disease. You know, what we know is that elevated uric acid is also can be under genetic control. Certain people are predisposed to elevated uric acid levels, which can cause gout and kidney stones. But actually, the recipes and the foods generally in the book don't cause elevated uric acid, because if anything, I've told my patients, and it's in the book, that you should eat red meat in moderation. I mean, people who enjoy going out once or twice a month or at home having a steak, you know, that's fine. They did that in the Mediterranean regions, but it's not to be consumed every day and every meal like we do, like I discussed. But if somebody has, like Matt, if he has an elevated uric acid, number one, it can be treated. There are medications that lower uric acid, and it should be treated. Because if you're walking around with high uric acid levels, you're going to be at increased risk of developing gout or kidney stones. And secondly, there are certain types of foods that you certainly want to try to avoid, especially in excess, such as red meat, such as anchovies, such as certain things that can raise your uric acid levels.
Okay, another question from Kathy at AOL, no last name here. I'm supposed to limit my intake of vitamin K, but I'm really craving salads and nuts. What green stuff can I eat, really?
Well, you know, certainly for those people, especially that are on blood thinners, such as Coumadin, they, you know, are often told to limit, green leafy vegetables. But you got to make sure that that is correct, because I think that... you know, I don't know, Kathy's specific medical situation. I think you need to check with your personal treating physician, because certainly one of the things that green leafy vegetables, especially spinach and kale, bring to the table is zeaxanthin and lutein. And that's good for eye health, among other things, prevention of macular degeneration. And you know, one of the things that we know is that one should strive to eat all different colors of fruits and vegetables. Colors are very important, because all the different colors bring different, what we term phytonutrients and antioxidants to the table. The red tomato, for instance, is a rich source of lycopene. We know that, of course, oranges and grapefruits are a great source of vitamin C, and carrots and sweet potatoes are a great source of beta-carotene, and I could go on and on. The fact of the matter is that Mother Nature has always done a better job than what we can do of packaging all of the literally thousands upon thousands of vitamins and nutrients in food than we could ever put into a pill. In fact, the studies really have always shown that a healthy diet that provides us with all of the different fruits and vegetables and whole grains is far better than trying to supplement with high-dose vitamins or antioxidants. Those studies have not panned out. It's certainly okay for people, the majority of people, if they want to take a one-a-day multiple vitamin, but this idea of taking the, you know, very high doses of specific vitamins, in the past it used to be vitamin E, people thought it was like motherhood and apple pie, that vitamin E had to be good for you. Well, the study showed that it wasn't in high dose. But vitamin E in food, such as eating almonds and other sources of vitamin E, was good for you. And I think that it's because that all of these antioxidants work in concert with one another to confer good health upon people. And no one antioxidant should be used in high dose because it can drown out the other ones. The analogy I like to make to my patients is that if you went to a symphony orchestra, Ludwig von Beethoven wrote the Ninth Symphony, and he called out for so many violins and so many French horns, and instead of, say, two French horn players showing up, let's say 100 showed up, and they would drown out the other instruments. So instead of having harmony, you'd have chaos. And I think that's really what happens when we start using too high a dose. And you have to be careful because a lot of these vitamin companies and a lot of, you know, you read about taking this vitamin and that vitamin. Again, I'd rather see my patients spend their money on getting fresh, non-processed foods with a wide variety of color, along with whole grains and cold water fish and nuts and beans and the things that I talked about. To me, that's a winning strategy.
Okay, another question from the listening audience. This one from Alfred Darling. And thank you so much for keeping this short. A lot of times I have to read through a lot to get a question. But he says, Doc, any difference in regular or organic food for us heart patients?
Another good question. And actually, I do not recommend that my patients spend the extra money to buy organic foods. And the reason for that is real simple. There has never been a study to show that if you eat organic foods that you're going to be healthier than eating a wide variety of fruits and vegetables that we discussed of all different color. You know, one of the problems is that organic foods happen to be very expensive. And, you know, especially with our economy being the way it is, people don't have an unlimited budget. And I don't know that it justifies spending 3-4 times as much for organically grown foods that have never been shown in any kind of clinical trial to be healthier than eating fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains that you can buy that are much less expensive than the organic foods.
Okay, another listener question, and they're piling up here. This is from Sharon in Georgia. Are there natural supplements that can take the place of pharmaceuticals? I had a stroke in August. My doctor put me on blood thinners. Looks like Dantovin, maybe. I'm afraid not to take it, but read on the Internet that people who take blood thinners only live about 10 years. What's wrong with blood thinners that they shorten your life?
Well, first of all, I would highly recommend that anybody who is under the care of a treating physician who has had blood clots or has, medical condition that warrants blood thinners follows the advice of their doctor, because blood thinners can save your life. And it's specifically, there are a lot of conditions such as atrial fibrillation, people who have had blood clots traveling to their brain or to their lungs who need to be on blood thinners, and they need to be monitored. And you can monitor the effect of blood thinners with blood tests. And I honestly believe that, as I mentioned earlier, one of the most important things that every one of your listeners can do is have an ongoing relationship with their personal treating physician. Because at the end of the day, you need your personal treating physician to help guide you. I think it's very important that people get read books, listen to shows like this, because they know what questions to ask. And an informed patient, I think, does better than a non-informed patient. But you should take that information and sit down with your physician. And clearly, if he's telling you you need to be on blood thinners because of a medical condition, then I think that you should either follow his advice, or if you question the advice of your physician, don't ever hesitate to get a second opinion.
Okay, I'm going to take one more question from the audience, and then I want to talk about your new book, This Great American Heart Hoax. The last question is, I have wheat and milk allergies. Any substitutes for your wonderful recipes?
Yes, actually, certainly the milk allergies are something that is not uncommon. And I think that you certainly, a lot of people who have these milk allergies can take soy milk. Because often milk allergies, people are lactose intolerant, or they have some of the proteins of milk that they're allergic to. And the wheat, allergies, also the same thing is that you really, every person, it's hard to make generalized statements because, not everybody has milk allergies or wheat allergies, and there are certain syndromes that you can have that you, again, need to check with your personal treating physician and find out what you can. But clearly there are substitutes, and, I think that, for instance, for dairy products, soy protein can be a substitute. As another example, one of the nice type of desserts, instead of eating ice cream, you can have a whey protein smoothie. And whey protein is one of the whey protein isolates from milk, which does not have lactose, and clearly most people are able to tolerate, and it provides essential amino acids. Can be made into a delicious smoothie that many recipes in the book for that. But again, I think if you have specific problems or allergies, food intolerance, again, check with your physician, and there are ways of determining, is this a true food allergy, or is this something that could be obviated, by utilizing, instead of, again, milk, soy protein, or something of that sort. But
yeah,
there are so many different examples that it would be impossible to give a generalized statement.
I shortened her question. She has an allergy or sensitivity to milk protein. Another question came in. I mean, I should send all the rest of these to you because they're incredibly good. I guess this is a yes or no question. Do you have a concern over heavy metals and other contaminants in fish? And when you answer that, then I want you to talk about your Great American Heart Hoax, your new book.
Right. Well, let me tell you that the contaminants and the heavy metals, and particularly mercury in fish, has been brought up in the news media for the last several years. But I could tell you, again, some of the pioneering work with this has also come out of the Harvard School of Public Health, where we know that it's what we term in medicine the risk-benefit ratio. Because everything that you eat can potentially, as we found out recently with E. coli outbreaks with spinach, we know that from red meat, things such as mad cow disease and on. But the fact of the matter is that for the vast majority of individuals, the benefit that they will derive from eating fish like salmon, which is abundant in omega-3 fat and has a very small amount of mercury, is far and away better for most individuals than having one or two fish meals a week and ending up with a mercury intoxication, which is really, as the Harvard School of Public Health said in one of their symposiums, that you would have to eat just literally just pounds and pounds of salmon every day. Nobody does that. There are certain types of fish that we actually recommend that you, if you do consume, you do it very rarely. And as an example, swordfish. Swordfish is high in mercury. Some of the fish, and you have to check, depending on where you live in the United States, that are caught out of lakes that are contaminated, you got to be a little careful there. But for the most part, the salmon, the trout, the sardines, they're healthy. They provide omega-3. And, you know, where we really want to have people be a little more careful and check with their physicians are pregnant women, as well as young children. But I think for the most part, for the average American, I can sum it up by saying that having fish in moderation is clearly better for their health than trying to avoid it.
We only have 2 minutes left. Your book, Miami Mediterranean Diet, is available at Amazon. They give it 4 stars at $16.47. It may save your life, but can you give us a couple of sentences about your new book, and we'll just have
The Great American Heart Hoax. That's going to be coming out in a couple weeks, and clearly that book is divided into two sections. Number one, the problem of why are we doing all this surgery. A lot of this surgery that we're doing is unnecessary, and stents and all these medications that we're taking and all the radiation we're exposed to with these 64-slice CTs. That's, a lot of these things aren't good for us. Part two is the solution. And I have the 10-step prevention plan that I've used for over 20 years that works. And if anybody's interested, my website is www.drozner.com. That's D-R-O-Z-N-E-R.
That's, and do you want people to contact you through your email or phone number?
Yeah, that's all the information's on my email site. They could look and get the information about that if they have particular questions. I'm always willing to answer as many as I can. And again, it's Dr. Ozner, DROZNER.com.
Well, will you come back and talk to us about your new book?
I'd love to. It'd be my pleasure.
Great. We are out of time. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.